Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
I just have no interest in those two teams.
Me neither. I no horse in that race at
Does
all.
Does anyone?
I do have a horse in the race, in so much as the LA Rams beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and I am from Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So it made me a little sad.
But Florida, so you're spoiled. You're so spoiled. You got like three football teams in Florida. So like, you know,
yep.
if a Florida team isn't in the playoffs in any given year, that's pretty sad.
Right. Our teams in Florida, now that Marino has moved on and retired, kind of all are pretty mediocre. And of course, Brady, too. Brady's now retired, too. So, yeah, you know, who cares about our teams? However, you are from a state where one team is sufficient for everybody in that state, and that team
and then some.
Is right. Everybody loves the pack. The pack is the pack. How do you say it?
The pack is.
Pack is. And they're singular in so much as they're the only team in the NFL where you can own a share.
Yes, that is correct.
You can buy a T-shirt from any team you want, a cap from any team you want, but only one team can you buy a share, like they're not for profit. They're not a business share.
Well, right, because the Green Bay Packers are a nonprofit organization. Making them, in my opinion, the most libertarian of the NFL teams, because they are not owned by one singular owner. I think we all agree in an actual free market, sports are going to exist.
Yes.
Right. Because it's just entertainment, right? Sports entertainment exists, and it just, you know, it'll be there. So in an actual free market, what we would see is probably a blend of these two, maybe hybrid, where it's like partially owned by the community, and then there's like one guy who's like sort of the angel investor. If the team needs something, you know, he comes in and throws down for a new stadium or something like that.
I think rich people are generally bored, and this is like one of their hobbies. Right?
I think that people buy NFL teams to make money.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But they usually have a passion for it.
Yeah. Well, everybody wants to be a sports team owner.
Right.
I mean, it's, you know.
So you would still have the ownership, and the only thing that would happen with the rich people, absent the state, is they would take on more risk.
Yes,
right, by building the stadiums or whatever.
Well, and also because they're not paying as much tax, in theory, at least the team or the businesses surrounding the team, as Mark was illustrating. If those folks aren't paying tax, well, then, you know, they're making more revenue, creating more jobs, you know, more opportunity, et cetera, and so on.
Yeah.
In short, ladies and gentlemen, I hope your team wins the Super Bowl. Good luck.
I just want to say from a pop culture perspective that currently Star Wars is kicking Star Trek's ass.
In what manner?
In their television offerings. So The Mandalorian / The Book of Boba Fett is far superior to Star Trek Discovery and Star Trek Lower Decks.
Okay.
So the current thrilled with Boba Fett, man.
The current television offerings from both franchises, Star Wars is definitely far superior to Star Trek at this point.
Well, they're cranking them out.
I've seen all the original Star Treks. I've seen all the Deep Space Nines and the Next Generation or New Generation, one of the two.
Yep. Voyager, all that stuff.
I haven't seen that.
Oh, okay.
That's where I stopped.
Have. Yeah.
End of story. And I've seen some of the new Star Wars stuff, and some's been better and some's been worse. I did watch the first couple or three episodes of Boba Fett. I thought it was worth the watch, but, you know, I got time.
Boba Fett might have been my least favorite offering so far.
Okay. What do you like?
Between Star Wars, I mean, do you agree that Star Wars is kicking Star Trek's ass currently?
I can't answer that because I don't watch Star Trek.
Okay. Like, all right. So you're a Wars guy, not a Trek guy.
Right.
Okay, yeah. Got you.
About 20 years ago, there was research done at the NIH, and it was from extraction from cancer cells. And with that extraction, it was possible to get the ends of the telomeres to re-ravel and extend. The only problem was that the cancer can be carried over. And then, of course, what happens then is that the ends of the telomeres extend too much, and they just overextend and they kind of explode with growth after a while. But to some degree, in certain ones, not all of them, but you only need one. You only need to get the cancer started once,
right.
That causes a problem. So the research has to be finished. that big of a deal. As far as I can think, it's not that big of a deal. But in other words, it can be done.
So what you're saying the most important thing is increasing human lifespans. Why do you think that's so?
Because if you re-rattle the ends of the telomeres, you're solving the problem of aging. And when the ends of the telomeres kind of dissipate and fade, that's aging. And aging eventually causes weaknesses and genetic weaknesses, and then, of course, the onset of all different kinds of degenerative diseases and eventually death.
13 years ago, the inventor of the Bitcoin network, Satoshi Nakamoto, published the first forum post on the P2P Foundation website. The forum post called "Bitcoin Open Source Implementation of P2P Currency" introduced the eCash system to members of the advocacy and research forum focused on peer-to-peer dynamics in society. That's a long way to say some smart people on the internet got together, and he was like, hey, you guys are smart people. Check out my idea.
I see.
And so he made the post.
Yeah, most people who saw got to see the original posts, you know, all the promotions that were done by the Bitcoin people, most of them just ignored them still. Yeah. And then a few got involved, and a few of them managed to keep some of the Bitcoin they mined early, because a lot of people just mined this stuff as a joke,
right?
You know, and then tossed out the laptop it went on.
Well, the important people who took interest in it, of course, the cypherpunks, right? And
but most of them tossed it out too.
a lot of them did, but there was a few of them that paid very close and good attention to it, and they sort of were of the opinion that something like this fell in line with their philosophies.
Well, I think that that's true. When we found out about it, it was almost 2 years after Satoshi had created Bitcoin.
So 2010 or so?
Late 2010.
I found Bitcoin a different direction than anything else. Do you remember SETI at home?
SETI search for extraterrestrial.
You're going to use your computer's processing power to find that.
Right.
And so I was aware of that, and then there was Folding at Home, which I had running on a PS3, which was, you know, we're going to use your computer's processing power to do protein foldings.
Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah.
And then Bitcoin came along. It was like, we're going to use your computer's processing power to mine this thing.
Right.
And so I had it was 2009, somewhere along the line, the beta version of Bitcoin. And I left it running. Okay, I'm going to contribute to the network. But Folding at Home, it shows you how many proteins you folded or whatever. And I left Bitcoin running for 2 weeks and got nothing. I'm turning this off.
Yeah, I was an old school downloader, if you will. Think Napster.
Sure.
And so because of that, I was like, oh, sweet. I can get, files, and they're shared with me. And this is great. And so I already sort of understood how a magnet torrent worked.
Yeah.
And so when this Bitcoin thing came along and they started talking about how it's decentralized and distributed amongst all of the computers running nodes, and you can be a node too, and I'm like,
wouldn't you like to be a node
too? I'm like, this makes a whole lot of sense. And so it was because of my understanding of file sharing that I immediately gravitated towards
crypto. I'll back it up a little more too, because for me the concept of peer-to-peer currency first entered my brain with the Dreamcast VMUs.
I mean, it's not an unreasonable thought to think BTC could reach $100,000.
Well, if it reached $100,000, I don't know how to figure that into the total market cap.
Yeah.
But, it would increase that number, but it would still not be at a million.
Okay. All right. I got you. Because
I am backing off the statement that BTC Bitcoin will be worth $1 million per Bitcoin. There are plenty of maximalists and small blockers out there that believe, in fact, that will be the case. Mm-hmm. I am not making that statement. I'm not saying that it's not true either.
What about 100,000?
I think it'll hit 100,000 at some point. I think that's inevitable.
Richie?
I would not back away from the $1 million mark. Seven figures per a Bitcoin is still reasonable in my mind. But I'm a maximalist.
So are you really?
For the most part.
Yeah. Huh.
Just BTC.
You have not done any maximalist type things that I'm aware of. I know that you have. We've discussed different types of cryptocurrency, just you and me, talking, show prep, stuff like that. So it didn't occur to me that you were
a maximalist. You could be a soft maximalist. And then there's the hard maximalists, like the people that are like, you cannot speak in my presence of another cryptocurrency.
Right, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And they basically...
They're like religious, yeah. You know, yeah.
Channeling Max Kaiser, you know, the whole shebang.
I will accept other cryptocurrencies for, like, payment.
One of the things that the creation of cryptocurrencies, including Bitcoin and things like Bitcoin Cash and all the other ones too, has helped is with things like fundraisers and donations and the ability just to move funds quickly without any interference, particularly from governments and banks. You know, so if, you know, Bob's over here, he's like, oh my gosh, I need some funds. Anybody, anywhere in the world can send Bob some funds as long as they have his crypto address. So within all of that, of course, comes, and we've talked about these on Free Talk Live before, every now and again, somebody comes up with a neat idea to fund some sort of a crypto community, a crypto city, a crypto island. Mark, you've been involved in some of these, and so I wanted to talk about this from, it's actually out of theguardian.com. I found several articles. This is just the first one that popped up. Bitcoin Paradise. Britain creates a crypto utopia in the South Pacific. Anthony Welch and partner try to woo cryptocurrency investors to regulation-free island on Vanuatu Archipelago.
Okay, so Vanuatu's doing this. This is news to me.
Another move here project for Mark to add to the list.
Yeah, so I do keep a list of the projects where people suggest you move to a given location in order to achieve some more level of freedom in your life. I have greater and lesser critiques for each of these things.
Hey, Daily Digest listeners, this is Riley Blake. I enjoy Free Talk Live, and I know you do too, but finding time to listen to an entire episode isn't always easy, so I produce the Daily Digest. I appreciate those of you who have supported me on Patreon and sent Bitcoin to me to thank me for producing these digests. For those who wish to support me on Patreon, visit patreon.com/crblake86. If you wish to send Bitcoin, visit patreon.com/crblake86 for those details. That's patreon.com/crblake86. Thank you.
New Mexico, our state, is going to go get our first baby dump-off box.
Baby dump-off box.
Yeah, the dump-off. You know, before you could legally abandon a baby at the police station, the hospital, emergency room, and also...
And some other places.
Was it the library? I don't know. Or there was a fire department.
Right.
Yeah, fire departments are very common for this. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know what? But recently, like, there was a 18-year-old mother that dumped her baby off in the trash can.
See?
Yeah, and so, Sarah, let me just stop you there. This is from KOB.com. 3 years ago, and this is a quote from an article there, 3 years ago, we did find a baby in the trash can deceased. So that's why we're really looking for different options, different ways, something that we could do to help raise awareness, Wickersham said. One of my friends sent me a video on Safe Haven baby boxes, and I sent it to the mayor, and I said, hey, this is something we should do here in the city, and it just grew from there. There are currently 99 baby boxes in six states in the United States. So far, 15 babies have been left in one. Each box costs about $10,000 to install, but Safe Haven Baby Boxes raises donations to cover the cost and donated the one for Española in New Mexico. From time to time, human beings are either poor enough human beings that they're like, I got to get rid of this thing, or they're thoughtful enough that they're like, I in no way can take care of this little tiny human being. And there should, in my opinion, be an avenue for that. There's very few times that I will actually say that organized religion is good for something. This is one of those things that I think the perfect place for something that resembles this type of a service or product, which, you know, in this case, a baby box, this should be all handled privately by churches.
I've never been a unwed mother, but...
so far.
Right. It seems like the chances are low. Of all the things that Mark could be in the next, you know, 50 years of his life or whatever, an unwed mother seems unlikely.
You could be that tomorrow with just the simple words of your mouth.
You're right. I could claim to be a woman and then somehow get a child and then be unwed. Yes. Anyway, I'm not thinking this is going to go on. And so I would probably be most comfortable personally with going to a church yes. and handing my child to somebody and saying, and that person saying, look, you know, we understand the position you're in. We're going to take very good care of your kid, and we don't even want to know your name. $10,000 sounds like an outrageous sum to cut a hole in the side of a building and put a little swinging door thing in. But okay. And presumably there's something more that goes into it. There's some monitoring and that kind of thing. So I'm for anything that results in fewer accidental deaths of babies.
Yes, me too. However, the state should not be.
Yeah,
I have my problems. I have my problems with organized religion. I really do. I became, you know, we'll call it non-theist, atheist, whatever you want to call it, agnostic. You know, some people have a different opinion of what I am, including myself from time to time. But I sort of absconded from organized religions many, many moons ago. And then I became what I call anarchist for the exact same reasons. Because these organizations continuously argue with each other. Nobody can do anything. You know, they can't get anything straight. And each one thinks their way is the best way. When the truth is, it should be up to the individual, right? Governing yourself, it just should be the norm. Every human being on planet Earth should govern themselves.
I've made the statement before with your organized religion thing that we always talk about on this show, like getting the state out of education.
Yes.
Right. Well, who's going to fill that gap? Immediately, it's likely going to be organized religion.
Yeah, very much so.
Because they have the money. So if you get rid of state schools, you're going to have more religious schools. I don't think handing off a child should be made all that easy to do.
I think that people who are ready to hand off their children, that it should be easy to do.
Okay.
If you're prepared to do it, sure. Then it should be easy.
Yeah,
but if advertising you make it easy to do, more people will choose to do it because it's easy.
And what are the results? Are the people who managed to get to keep their child, what is the likelihood that they've done a good job parenting 18 years down the road?
I'm not saying they have to keep it. I'm just saying again.
Well, you just said that if you make it easy, that more people will do it.
Yeah.
And I'm asking you, of the people that you make it for whom you made it easy enough that they changed their mind, they went from not keeping a baby to keeping a baby. So there's that group in the middle. There's the ones that are definitely going to give up their baby, and they're going to do hell or high water, they're going to do so. There's the ones who are definitely going to keep their baby, and nothing's going to change that. But then there's this sliver of people, this probably one mom a year, that if you make it easy, she gives up her baby, and if you don't, she doesn't. That okay. Mom, I'm asking you to look 18 years down the line at that child. What do we have? Is it an asset or a societal asset, or do we have a societal problem?
A leech, yeah.
Lots and lots of money.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
I agree that if cities continue to install these things and they become more popular, that people who didn't know this was an option now know it's an option, and you might see an increase in people doing so. That is definitely a possibility.
And I will agree with you, Richie. Firemen are much more likely to be in a fire station 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, than, say, bankers are at a bank, or even McDonald's workers at McDonald's. Yeah. So
put them at the Waffle House.
If
they don't get closed for a hurricane.
Until they close the fire department, I say, sure. Have baby boxes at fire departments.
Right, and then Rich opined that if you're abandoning your baby, that there should, in his opinion, there should be a shame factor associated with doing so.
I've decided
a societal shame factor.
I was giving him the benefit of the doubt on this one because I kind of feel the same way, but I've decided no. You should be ashamed of a lot of things, but if you're mature enough to say at whatever age you are that you can't handle a baby, you should be lauded. Somebody wants that baby. The demand in the marketplace for that baby is high.
It does exist.
So if you don't attempt to, flush it, cut up pieces and flush it down the toilet, or doing something far worse, then I'm going to go ahead and say I'm abandoning the shame aspect on this one. I will agree with Richie that many things should be shameful that are not.
And we don't know that just because there are baby boxes and somebody abandons the baby that person does not feel shame.
So when you had to go to a church and say, hey, look, things are really going badly.
Yeah.
And I know you guys have a fund for this, and my family needs it. That's when you're asking, And asking is a more shameful act than demanding.
Right.
If you've been told this is yours by right, then you're in the entitlement realm, and that's the issue. So now, mind you, when we talk about welfare, I think it's always fair to mention that there's plenty of corporate welfare out there, and subsidies for all kinds of industries are the same thing as far as I'm concerned. That rise or fall, you should make it on your own 2 feet, and if you can't, then that's what charities are for.
Even corporate welfare is celebrated by a lot of, you know, people in society.
Well, what do they say about farmers? They only bury them 3 feet deep so they can still get their arm out for a handout.
It was welfare. And then harm reduction when it comes to, like, drug use.
Right.
Right? Because all of a sudden, you know, the whole Biden crack pipe thing is all in the news right now. But it's still, you know, government funds going like, well, as a society... Right, we're looking at long term, and if we let these druggies go out and spread disease, right, it costs society more.
Yes, they do.
So we're going to do harm reduction.
There's two parts of the FCC, right? Like the one part is are you sending radio waves in the wrong manner? And the other part is did you say something naughty on the wrong radio waves? Because remember, ladies and gentlemen, lots of naughty things travel across Wi-Fi, and that's radio waves. However, radio waves on the radio, as if, like, think about it, ladies and gentlemen, how many children are listening to Free Talk Live broadcast from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m.? Like right now, it's 9 p.m. Eastern. How many children are listening to Free Talk Live on the radio?
Well, I don't know. I did a bit of an experiment by this past holiday season. By announcing that Santa Claus is not real over this particular program. And I'm like, children, if any of you are listening, Santa Claus is not real. It's your parents. One guy called in to be like, Captain. And like,
it's rude.
He's like, I'm disappointed in you. He's like, I know you're just saying the facts, but I'm disappointed.
Yeah,
So one guy called in.
So we're keeping Captain off the air at Easter then, right?
What's that?
We're keeping Captain off the air at Easter?
Yeah, I suppose that's the case.
Easter Bunny's not real.
Well,
hey, you know what else isn't real?
The government doesn't care about you.
You know what else isn't real? The little Cupid guy on Valentine's Day.
20 years ago, before Amazon and before Netflix and before all this stuff, people would say, well, I read an article that homeless people can make $40,000 tax-free by standing on the side of the road asking for money. And I don't know whether that is false. I'm not going to claim it's false.
Panhandling.
I'm just claiming that this same the same envy of these people has existed. And I think the problem is that they're allowed to be there.
Well, so
we've just made it easy enough to do it.
So my stance on this whole thing has been the default position of humankind. You know, when you fall out of your mom's vagina onto whatever plot of ground she happens to be on.
It's usually a while till you hit the ground, but
hopefully
the
nurse catches you.
Okay, I'm just making.
I got the notion. Yeah,
you are poor personally,
sure.
And so the default position of a human being is one of poor. You have no wealth. You haven't obtained any skills. Your help, all that kind of thing. So the question isn't, you know, what causes people to be poor and destitute? The question is what causes prosperity.
Indeed. Right. And we should foster the things that that cause prosperity. Yes. And we should, to my mind, punish, shame, whatever the things that cause, poverty.
There's this guy, Mr. Welch. He has a 3 million square meter island, and which is part of the... how do you say this, Mark? Vanuatu?
Vanuatu, yes.
Vanuatu archipelago between Australia and Fiji. He wants to turn it into Satoshi Island, make it people who are into cryptocurrency can move there and make it into some sort of crypto city. What he says, the way he differentiates himself from other types of this thing, and we've seen this before, Mark, you've been involved in a couple of these things, sort of these move here crypto projects, and there have been other people who have been wanting to, yes, I want to buy an island and make it a crypto island, that kind of a thing.
Yeah, sure.
So what we know already.
So we're working on that myself right now.
Is, yes, we already own the island. This is from this guy, Welch, who's tweeting as Satoshi Island. He says, yes, we already own the island. Yes, we can develop as advertised. Yes, the government supports our plan. Yes, our team has relevant expertise. And they've apparently produced some sort of a sales video, if you will. Like, this is our dream. We dream of the Satoshi Island. And
man, if I was that guy, I would just be enjoying the tropical paradise.
One of my thoughts would be, what's the internet like? I want to know whether we have electricity. How often is it on? What happens? Do we flush toilets? What happens when we do?
Wait a minute, Mark. Are you suggesting you want to wait until everything is set in place before you give it a chance? Don't you want to go there and support it up front and help build all that infrastructure early on?
I'm happy to do that if I receive the benefits of doing so.
Okay.
But if I am just, you know, if I'm paying retail and not getting retail,
okay.
I want to know what, I want to look under the hood of this thing.
Okay.
And by the way, that's what I'm doing right now with Coral Beach in Utila, Honduras.
So to answer your question, I've just sort of, you know, skipped over some things here. It says that the Satoshi Island will succeed where other attempts such as Cryptoland failed because he and his partners own the island.
They already own it.
And he claims the development plans have the support of both the government and the local community.
Yep.
However, the Vanuatu government failed to respond to any requests for comment.
Not a surprise.
And Welch was unable to provide contact details for any current local residents. Richie Rich, why would a zoo hire a Marvin Gaye impersonator to get monkeys in the mood?
I think you just answered your own question. They would hire the monkey. They would hire the Marvin Gaye impersonator.
I guess I want to know, did it work?
Let's find out.
That's the question I want to know. Is that if you go and sing Marvin Gaye songs, because I would think Barry White would be what your average primate was into.
I was going to say that, like, why wouldn't they hire a Barry White impersonator instead of a Marvin Gaye impersonator? Or perhaps the monkeys are into...
Trouble Man?
No, like saxophone, like some Kenny G or something. You know, I don't know.
Nobody's really into Kenny G.
I know, but I'm just saying that, like, how do they know the monkeys' taste in music? So this is from UPI.
Monkeys taste like pork.
And let's remember, everybody, as I like to say, human beings are just barely not monkeys.
Yeah, just we're apes.
Or so apes, this should work then.
No, we are apes.
Because we like Marvin Gaye.
Do we?
As a species? Do you know anyone who hates Marvin Gaye?
No, I guess I don't.
All right.
The
lovemaking in my household goes on to the sound of pleading.
Like goats and stuff?
Indeed.
Mark begging.
Please.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.